every single year for 25 years, it's going to make approximately $200 million in after-tax free cash flow in Canadian dollar terms. So it's not a first 5 years and look for more. So do we need to find more? Are we looking for other minerals or byproducts? No, we make enough cash as the project is. I also want to add that we have already indicated by drilling 50 more years potential of resource salt already in place. So as you know, you have to move resource to reserve. And I also want to, this is one thing that helped key me in when I joined, right? Because I've just spat some numbers out to you about the size of the deposit. It's like 1.2 billion tons of salt. Like what, how do you think about that, right? Well, that's over a billion, that's over $100 billion worth of salt at today's prices in the ground.
Welcome back, everybody. Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I have with me Nolan Peterson, who is the CEO of Atlas Salt. Nolan, it's great to have you. How are you today?
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm fantastic.
Nolan, I was excited to, you know, I circled this date on the calendar because it's not every day I get to talk about salt, and I don't usually start off this way, but I've got to ask it this way, and I need to ask you, why salt? You know, what did you see in the market? Was it the chicken or the egg? Did you see the need for salt and look for this project, or this kind of project come to your lap and you realized what you had and kind of went that way? If you can.
Yeah, I think it would be more the latter. The project came to me, and, you know, I've spent over 20 years of my career in mining. Just to give your audience a bit of a background and yourself, I'm an engineer, process metallurgist. I also have an MBA and a CFA, so I have the financial experience as well. I've built projects. I've been involved in developing them. I've been in executive management, primarily almost entirely in the gold industry. So I'm very familiar with, you know, 43-101s, permitting challenges, EAs, feasibility studies, drill results, all the same types of things that everybody who invests in a gold or silver or copper project is experienced with. So I knew nothing about salt, but when Atlas Salt came looking for a new CEO, and maybe we'll get into it on why that was the case, I took one quick look at everything that the company had already in its toolbox. It had already completed and had been de-risked, and I knew that this was a fantastic project that I had to be a part of, because as an engineer, you fundamentally want to build things, right? You want to tinker with things. You want to. I'm a big Lego guy. In my spare time with my kids, I just have that desire to be building and fiddling around, right? And what better than to build a mine for a mining guy, right? And so I saw that this is a project that could actually be built. And as opposed to other projects that had been coming my way, which is, you know, hey, let's drill something and see if we can find something and do a transaction. And, you know, that's exciting to an extent, but I'm not a geologist. That doesn't float my boat the same way, right? So no. That's how the project came to me, took one look at it, and then I became an expert in the salt industry.
So Nolan, you are in Vancouver, you're around mining people all the time. And so you, like you and
not
I
always a good thing.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're good. You know, there's gold. People know about that.
Yeah.
You know, silver, there's copper we talked about. You know, I like uranium, I like tungsten and all that stuff, but you're the first salt company I've come across. So what drew you to, you said you were excited. What was exciting? And if you can tell us about the project that you saw, was it the fundamentals? And then if you can tell us a little bit about the project, is it exclusively salt? Do you have other stuff there? I mean, just kind of help me understand and bridge the gap.
Yeah, so the fundamentals are really what drew me to the project, and it goes deeper than just like some of the things that I mentioned previously, and it talks about the industry itself. I learned that, let me start with the project. We are on the west coast of Newfoundland. We have a salt deposit called the Great Atlantic Salt Project. It's near a town called St. George's, actually about a kilometer away. So that should key you in already. Okay, it's in Newfoundland. It's a, you know, it's not in the middle of nowhere. Well, some people consider Newfoundland the middle of nowhere, but it truly isn't. We have about 50,000 people living within an hour's drive of us. We've got hydro 2 kilometers away, hydro connection, that's power, right? We have the Trans-Canada Highway, and more importantly, proximity to a deep water port that's open year-round, ice-free, fully permitted. So again, talking about mining, you start to add up all the infrastructure fundamentals it has, and then you start to realize in the salt industry, heavily driven by distribution, logistics, and shipping. And you realize, okay, this is where the rubber starts to meet the road. You've got a great deposit, and you have all the infrastructure and logistics elements you need to build the project. And the unique thing about Atlas Salt, why you don't talk to other many other salt companies, is there's only one other publicly traded salt producing company in North America. It's called Compass Minerals. They're close to about $1 billion Canadian market cap, $2 billion enterprise value. So they're already in production. They don't have any projects that they're trying to build. Atlas Salt is the only development stage salt asset in North America. So that's why you don't talk to many salt CEOs. There aren't too many of us out there. And we also get a lot of attention in the diversified industrial mineral sector, less so than the mining sector. But now we're a bunch of miners, such as myself, and we know that there's a lot of interest in the mining community for a project like this as well. So I hope I answered your question, but that's kind of what drew me in and what I've seen and why, we are kind of a rare sighting out there.
So, if you and another ones are, and you're the only developing salt company,
Developing, yeah.
you're like Pepsi and Coke, and so
Surprisingly, not actually. So we are the only public traded companies. There's a lot of private companies, a lot of privates. Actually, the largest salt company, Morton and Windsor, are two salt companies, but they're owned by the
Okay.
same group. These are names people might be familiar with, like Morton, Windsor, Sifto Salt as well. These are brands that people can buy on their shelves. They are bigger and they're owned by private equity groups. There's also Cargill. Cargill is a name people are familiar with. They're also quite large in the salt industry. And I want to be clear too that we talked about people think salt is used for food, which it is, but our salt is, we're talking about it's being used for de-icing road salt. So for people in the Eastern US, Midwest, Ontario, Quebec, the Atlantic provinces, very familiar with its use in keeping the roads clear of ice yearly. And in the winter, and this is especially a heavy demand season for that.
I live in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we got this whole huge salt mound. I guess we can take for granted where that comes from. Is that someone who would buy from you? Who's buying from you guys? Where's the demand
Yeah,
coming
so
from?
yeah, exactly. It's this exactly what you said. It's the every city, every town, every municipality, every DOT, every province, every state. Every buyer of salt to keep the roads clear. So all those salt mounds that you see building up in the spring, summer, and fall get drawn down in the winter and the cycle continues. Also, you can add on private landowners like parking lots, seniors' residences because they need good walking terrain, schools, malls, airports, wherever they have large private landowners or commercial type users that need to keep the roads clear, private highway owners, toll roads, things like that, that may not fall under government jurisdiction. They still need to keep the roads clear of salt of road of snow and ice, so they need salt as well. So you have this natural huge demand. It's based on people and population and roadways, which are always expanding, and it's also in many cases the customers are legally obligated to buy your product. They have to keep the roads clear by law. It creates liabilities if they can't. And so that's a very nice, strong demand base, right? It's recession proof, and people are, it's a steady, stable market that continues to go up in price every year.
So I want to talk about your Newfoundland per a project, your property. It's a Great Atlantic Salt Project. You said it's next to it's a port. You
Yeah.
got the roads and all that stuff. If you can tell us a little bit more, not just the infrastructure that you have, but as a jurisdiction, what challenges, what benefits do you see? And Do you guys, you're developing stage right now, so what's next in terms of what's are you guys have to do study? Do you guys have permitting issues? I mean, what's that like with salt? I just don't know.
Yeah, very, very long question, and I'm gonna actually go back one sec too to say, why it's so important that we do have that port, right? Because I talked about shipping and logistics, and really everything we talked about the salt market, the dirty secret that people don't really know or give pay much attention to, and I can't blame them, is that North America doesn't produce enough salt of our own. All the mines in North America going full production still fall short by about 30 to 40% of our salt needs. Not just in the de-icing market or the or all the other salt, not just in de-icing, but all the salt markets. And so that means that we have to import salt from, and we, I mean Canada and the US or one collective market, we have to import salt from as far away as Chile and Egypt, where you can make salt inexpensively enough, but you can still land it on our shores once you factor in the extremely high cost of shipping, that it still makes sense. So by us being in Newfoundland, we have and having access to this port, we can be a seaborne import at a much, much, much cheaper cost. So basically the same price of production at a foreign port, but with 2 to 3 days to say land a boat into Boston versus 2 to 3 weeks from Egypt or Chile, or longer in the winter when the boats are backed up and things like that. So that's why having that port is important. And being in Newfoundland gives us the flexibility to put boats anywhere on the Eastern Seaboard and up and down the St. Lawrence, depending on where the market is in any given year, whereas a lot of landlocked mines are kind of restricted on where they can access. So it gives us that flexibility as well. Now, Newfoundland is actually a fantastic jurisdiction to develop. You asked about permitting issues. We have none. We received an environmental assessment approval for the project in 44 days. So 6 weeks. 6 weeks from submission to receipt of the project to go ahead. That's some projects take 6 years or 60 years in some cases to get off the ground, right? So that's tremendous. And what underpins that is strong community support in the region and strong Indigenous support in the region as well. You can't get anything done in Canada and North America without having a community support and Indigenous support. And they all wrote letters of support for the project, which is why the project got approved, because this is one that will create jobs, create opportunity. It's recognized as such, and people want to be a part of it and supporting it.
Nolan, you talked about the people, the community. We talked a little bit about how you got into this. The property itself, are you exclusively mining salt? Do you have other stuff? Is that your focus, or are you only able to do salt? Is that a pure decision moving forward? Is
Yeah.
this good?
So, by the nature of salt deposits, they are the remnants of evaporated ancient seas millions of years ago that have been preserved as this block of salt. It fills in, evaporates, and it layers and layers and layers salt over millions of years. What we end up having is a 96% grading salt. So, 96%, that's pretty high purity, right? The remaining impurities, if you want to call them that, are other salts like calcium chloride, magnesium chloride, potassium chloride, or potash, or gypsum. But these are not materials that are at an economic level. So this project will be focusing entirely on salt. Now, you asked about studies earlier where we are. The project has a full feasibility study completed to the 43-101 standard. In fact, not one project feasibility study, but actually two. The most recent one last year, it had a 25-year mine life in that feasibility study. So the reserve is 25 years. Every single year for 25 years, it's going to make approximately $200 million in after-tax free cash flow in Canadian dollar terms. So it's not a first 5 years and look for more. So, do we need to find more? Are we looking for other minerals or byproducts? No, we make enough cash as the project is. I also want to add that we have already indicated by drilling 50 more years potential of resource salt already in place. So as you know, you have to move resource to reserve. And I also want to, this is one thing that helped key me in when I joined, right? Because I've just spat some numbers out to you about the size of the deposit. It's like 1.2 billion tons of salt. Like what, how do you think about that, right? Well, that's over a billion, it's over $100 billion worth of salt at today's prices in the ground. And if you converted that to a gold deposit, that would be the equivalent of a 20 to 25 million ounce gold deposit already defined by drilling. So, you know, you think about the gold companies that others are investing in, and like we look, hope to find another 500,000 ounces. We're already sitting on the revenue equivalent of 20 to 25 million ounces. So yeah, there's not really much need to go beyond the salt. And also there'll be no need for resource replenishment when we're in operations. It'll just be pure cash flow for the investor.
Nolan, you seem like you, I believe that you believe what you're saying.
Yeah,
But
absolutely.
if you can tell us a little bit about how invested you are, how much skin you have in the game, I want to really test how much do you really believe in salt here? And like, if you can tell us about the cap structure, any significant investors, institutions you have around you, if you can also talk about the number of shares and options, warrants, that sort of thing.
I joined last year in June of 2025. Before I joined, I obviously knew nothing about salt and I wasn't a part of the company, so I didn't get founder shares or anything like that. I'm just pure professional management here that's been brought in. Now, what I find in the mining industry is a lot of times the CEO either started the company or was brought into the company, and many of them don't end up actually buying any of their own shares. They're all founded, got founder shares, or they're just happy to get PSUs, RSUs, options, and their salary, of course, if they're brought in as professional management. And that's it. And I'm not like that. So in the last year, I've personally bought over 250,000 shares in the market, right? And just to be clear, I'm not a guy, you know, I'm hoping your audience is thinking, oh, this guy must be quite wealthy, but I do well for myself, but 250,000 shares is quite a bit of money for me and my family. And so we've invested over time. And when I started, the share price was 36 cents, and now we're trading at about $1.65, $1.70 Canadian. So we're doing quite well, I would say. Now, in terms of the capital structure, let me talk a little bit actually about the company's history. In 2019, this stock was at 5 cents Canadian, 5 cents. Remember, last year was at 40-ish cents, 35, 40 cents. When I joined. But during 2021 and peaking in 2022, this stock got to over $4 Canadian. It's from 5 cents. It's an 80 times return for a lot of investors. Tens of millions of dollars was made and changed hands and traded. It became really a meme stock, right? It's this type of commodity that everybody needs, like toilet paper. People are stocking up on it. It's going to be the new future. We need to tighten supply chains. The world never be the same. And that was good for a time. The company then hired a new CEO who was, you know, after the founder CEO stepped back to take the company to the next stage, but he completely, you know, dropped the ball. Let's be frank. He kept everything going on the technical front, but did not cultivate the relationships in the banking community, in the marketing, didn't talk to shareholders, didn't get analyst coverage, didn't do what you needed to do to develop a company in the public markets, right? He had never run a public company before. So that's when I joined at 30 something cents. And you know, we've reinvigorated the market by doing interviews like this and others to show people how fantastic an investment opportunity it is. Company has about 124, excuse me, 125 million shares outstanding. We've got about $17 million worth of cash in the bank. We just did a financing 2 months ago in June at $1.20 Canadian. We're already up in about almost 50% in the last couple months. So that's quite good as well for investors to take solace in. Over the last year, I've raised $25 million for the company, first at 80 cents. Then we did a small flow through raise at $1.30, and then the most recent one at $1.20. before I joined, the company hadn't raised a single dollar in 2.5 years. So we reinvigorated the company's ability to raise necessary funding and capital as well. We have no warrants, not a single general warrant. We have some broker warrants, which are just compensation for financing to investment bankers, but we have no warrants on the company. So there's no warrant overhang or anything like that. And we have a clean balance sheet with no significant long-term debt. And we have growing institutional support. So in terms of the market support, it's there, it's coming back. Interest is there. We are adding institutional investor support all the time. The company spun out of a junior company called Vulcan Minerals in 2012, VUL, and they maintain an ownership of about 24% of the company. And then insiders own another 10% or so. So we're at about 35% true insider ownership, with probably another 10 to 20% of never going to sell ownership stake.
Nolan, I don't know where to place you because I don't know who your peers are, but if you can talk to me about your market cap and your comps and where you see potential disconnect in valuation.
Yeah, so there is a we our market cap is about 200 million Canadian right now. We trade at what's very common in the mining industry for salt mining industry is to trade at multiples of EBITDA. So earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, amortization. It's also a proxy for pre-tax cash flow. Now, why do you trade at multiples of EBITDA as opposed to NPV or something like that? Because salt assets are very long-lived, right? So if the cash flow is stable and expected, you get a higher valuation on an EBITDA multiplier. And that's why salt industry. So the common multiplier in the salt space, and this has been backed by precedent transactions, is double digits. So in 20, Compass Minerals, the one I mentioned before, they own the largest underground salt mine in the world. They traded an EV to EBITDA multiplier of about 8. And that's still pretty good, even though that's depressed for them because they've had some challenges, operational and balance sheet issues in the last couple of years that are not related to salt. We can get into the details, but let's focus on salt here. In 2022, a private equity group paid 13x EV to EBITDA, $3.2 billion to acquire salt assets in the US that, in aggregate, multiple mines would produce roughly the same amount of EBITDA as our project will when we're in full production. So we see that as a good proxy, right? What's 13x our EBITDA? Our pre-tax or pre-tax cash flow or EBITDA in our feasibility study was 300 plus million Canadian. So 300 times 13, everybody can do the math on that one, right? In December, a private equity group purchased a salt producing asset in the US for $900 million US, and they paid 17x EBITDA. 17x EBITDA. In the gold industry, you're lucky to get 6 to 8 X in a very good year, just to give you a comp, right? Why? Because gold projects have a finite life. They last 10 to 15 years. You've got to find more. The grade starts to decline. It becomes more expensive to mine. Your profit margins drop, and then you've got to look for a new project, and that costs capital as well. So that's kind of how the salt industry is and the comps, and that's obviously the light at the end of the tunnel that we are chasing right now.
Nolan, my back of the neck and math isn't the most impressive, but just hearing you it makes me wonder, do you see, I mean, you guys being the only developing salt company for long, do you guys see other people trying to jump on board? It almost feels like it's a blue market, blue ocean where the opportunity is vast. So on one hand, I think that might give you a company like yours an advantage. On the other hand, makes me someone might be wondering, can your margins be maintained? I mean, do you see the profitability going down as, if you can kind of address both of those
Yeah.
and just kind of tell me what you
Yeah,
see.
you would expect in an area where mines can be, or not mines, but where there's a profit to be made, there will be more competitors coming in. But it's the exact same thing as a gold project, right? You have to actually have a good deposit. There has not been a new salt mine built in North America in 25 years. The last one was built in upstate New York, And that mine itself was the first mine built in North America in about 20 years. And it actually replaced a mine that was shutting down in the US as well, that had already shut down. Not it the supply was replaced. It wasn't a conscious one company replacing a mine with a new one. Point being is that and that has created this area or this market share where imported salt can come in and supply the market. Remember, at a very high cost. So they kind of create an equilibrium, an import equilibrium, if you will, where their high cost sets the price that domestic producers can sell at. And as long as it's higher than their operating cost, they can make a small margin, 10 to 20% in a good year, is their margin. Domestic or for imported salt can make about 20 to 30%, but our margins are so strong that we can make 50 to 60% margins. And the reason there hasn't been a new salt mine built in North America in 25 years, again, if you look at the market and you follow exactly what I was telling you earlier, a project has to have the characteristics that will actually allow it to make money. You have to have a good deposit. And good for us means we're shallow as well. We're 200 meters deep. Every other mine in North America is a vertical shaft access mine that's about 400 to 500 to 600 meters deep or deeper. That's very expensive to develop. Many of these mines also sit under lakes and rivers because that's where the salt deposits formed millions of years ago. So they got water issues, permitting challenges, and other concerns like that. We don't sit under a body of water, and we can access through a horizontal drift access. And then you factor in the logistics. Maybe you found a good mine, Steve. Now, how do you get that to market? Do you have a port near you? Are you on the ocean? Are you near a major city and the city has no problem putting a mine beside it? You start to think about this, and that's why, no, there's really no way a new salt mine can be built. And then you run into the typical challenges on permitting that every project experiences in North America. Who owns the land? Indigenous, First Nations in Canada, et cetera, et cetera. One thing I'll point out as well that helps on that, you know, again, how do you make a mine like this compelling? Because we're tied into hydro, it's going to be 100% battery electric in operations. So no greenhouse gas emissions. That helps with permitting as well, right? And it helps with costs. Again, talking about making it profitable, costs, because we're paying 5 to 6 cents per kilowatt hour for power Canadian, and no diesel consumption, no explosives, no cyanide, no sulfuric acid. None of these costs that in a good market like in the gold industry, those costs skyrocket because there's so much demand for cyanide now for gold extraction. So we can keep our costs low, and really nobody else can build a new mine because there aren't any viable deposits out there.
Nolan, there's lots to a lot of stuff that I'm sure investors would like hearing. I want to be full disclosure. Nolan Peterson, I've met just a little bit a while ago, just maybe a week ago or so. But this is my first time hearing this. It's people might have further questions. I've got further questions. I've got to do some numbers and stuff like that. But Nolan, I want to disclose to our audience that I am not currently an investor yet. I am interested and intrigued. Atlas Salt has not paid for this interview, so I'm not giving investment advice. But please do your due diligence. One of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Nolan or to follow the Atlas story. Nolan, if you could be so kind as to tell us how we can do that, if you can give us a ticker, your website, how people can address questions or get their questions answered.
Yeah, we trade on the venture under the ticker SALT, SALT, so great ticker. We trade on the OTCQX in the US under SALQF. We are the best place is in our newly designed website. It's been live for a few weeks now, www.atlassalt.com. That's two words, well, two words, but one, and make sure you have the two S's in the middle there, www.atlassalt.com. Feel free to reach out to me via email, investors. I think it's investors@atlassalt.com. And yeah, happy to answer any questions. Again, going back to being an engineer, once I figure out something, I want to learn all about it, and I want to make sure everybody else gets all their knowledge that they need as well. So happy to be that for your audience.
Nolan, I enjoyed it. I'm sure other people find this intriguing. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Steve.